Gui, like to welcome you all, of course. Maureen and I have known each other for quite a while.
Yeah.
Since that time of Burnt Church.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. Long time ago.
A long time
When I was
ago.
working at APTN.
Yeah, I remember that. And she called the radio station, and I asked her to to explain the situation up in Burnt Church at that time, and to do it all in the language. And it was beautiful because you did it all in language, in the Mi'kmaq language.
Oh, actually, no, it wasn't me. I don't speak Mi'kmaq.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's the one.
It must have been somebody else, maybe from Burnt Church or Escanobitish.
Okay, because it was very close. We were very, and your name came up.
Oh, yeah, I was there.
Yes,
but that must have been somebody else. I know some Mi'kmaq words, but I don't speak it fluently.
So it was great because we've also have covered many other events. ECMA.
We always cross paths all the time, Aggie and I.
missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, walking with our sisters.
I interviewed you.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah, you've interviewed me a few times too. So.
Well, I guess we already did the introductions, but to reiterate, I'm the Programming and Development Director at CKU, Halifax's campus radio station at Dalhousie University. So we're the only campus radio station in Halifax. And obviously with a campus radio station, we have a mandate to provide an alternative to the mainstream press. So that's public radio and commercial radio. We also have a responsibility to provide space and our airwaves to marginalized communities, so that includes BIPOC communities here in Halifax and other communities who are willing and enthusiastic to do a show here. So a lot of my job involves me recruiting programmers, specifically programmers from those communities, so that we can amplify their voices and so they can ensure that their voices are heard and so that they can also express themselves and learn different skills. In relation specifically to Indigenous voices, that's something that I've really wanted to do since I started at CKDU last year. I was building off the work of our diversity and outreach coordinator, Jade Tynes, who connected with Maureen, and now we are happy to say that we have a full-fledged show dedicated to local Indigenous affairs through Maureen's efforts. We also air two syndicated shows, one from CKUT in Montreal and one podcast that's done in Ottawa. So we're making steps towards having more representation, but I think CKDU obviously has a long way to go. And I'm happy to discuss that more as we get into this panel.
Okay. Like I said, my name is Maureen Gugu. I am Mi'kmaq from the Indian Brook First Nation, which is just about just under an hour's drive outside of Halifax. It's also known as Sebaganagadi. As my website suggests here, I'm the owner editor of googlegwest.com. It's a news website that's dedicated to coverage of Indigenous issues in Atlantic Canada. And I launched the website back in August 2015. Just so you know, I receive no government money to run this website. I generate income through a crowdfunding campaign at patreon.com. And we also sell ad space on the website. Just a little bit background on myself. Like I said, I've been working in journalism for the past 30 years. I've worked for news media outlets such as the Mi'kmaq News, CBC Radio in Halifax, Sydney, Toronto, and Northern Saskatchewan. I also worked as a reporter with the Chronicle Herald newspaper, and I was also the Halifax correspondent for the Aboriginal People's Television Network. My educational background, I studied political science at St. Mary's University here in Halifax, and I studied journalism at Ryerson University in Toronto and at Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism in New York City. And just to kind of give some background of how I wound up doing this and how I wound up doing a show with CKDU, while I was actually at Columbia University about 10, 11 years ago, I specialized in digital media. I mean, at that point, I've worked in print, I've worked in radio, I've worked in television. The only medium I hadn't worked in at that point was digital, so that's why I concentrated on that. And while I was there, I gained valuable skills in online journalism, such as creating websites and generating news content using photos, video, and audio. And it was while I was at Columbia that I got the idea to run my own news website covering Indigenous issues from this region. Shortly after launching GugguQuest.com, that was back in 2015, almost 2 years ago, I was actually approached by CKDU. Francella just mentioned that was Jade Tynes at the time, who was working as part of diversity programming. She approached me and asked if we could create a radio show about Indigenous issues. And being a multimedia journalist, and I actually brought it here, I record all of my interviews on a Zoom, which actually records broadcast quality audio. And up until that point, I only used my audio that I collected to isolate quotes from my news stories. And that's all I used it for. Up until that point, I wasn't repurposing it for anything else. So when the idea was suggested to me that, you know, I should create a radio show, I knew I had this audio that I could use to put together something. But at the same time, because, you know, I may be the owner editor of GugguQuest.com, but I'm also the only reporter working for my website. So I don't have a staff. It's just me and my husband who travel around. He takes the photos for me and, you know, he drives me around too. So I knew it would be a challenge because it's a workload issue. And I thought that would be overwhelming, but at the time I just said, you know, let's try it. So I took the audio that I had collected. I wrote a script for the show and, gave it to a radio technician there. And we kind of came to an agreement that, you know, they would cut, they would edit a show that would air on CKDU, and that they would cut me a version that I could actually use as a podcast that I can put up online on my website. So I recorded my first show back in November 2015, and at the time it was my only episode for that year. I tried it, but I just kind of found like it was just a lot of work to do that. So it never really went anywhere up until, I guess, last summer when I got a call from Francella, or an email from Francella asking if we'd like to revive GugguQuest.com, the radio show. So I decided to try it again. I was running my website for about a year at that point. So this time around, we decided to do it. And, you know, right now we've managed to put together about 12 episodes since October of last year.
Yay! Yeah.
And it's a really it's a real challenge to do that, because there are times when I have a lot of audio and I can put together a show easy. And then there's times where I don't have time to put together a show because I'm just trying to catch up on the new stories that I am working on. Or sometimes I just haven't collected any audio. It's just, you know, so we're not very consistent, but like I said, I'm very proud of the fact that we have 12 episodes. And thanks to Francella, she actually edits the show for me, so I don't have to worry about that post-production after we record it. But, you know, there's still the same issue exists. I'm still the only reporter writing for the website, so I'm still the only reporter collecting audio. When I started writing down talking points for this particular panel discussion, one little theme that kept coming up in my head was sort of pay the writer, you know, support writers. And for me, I just wish that I was generating more money from my crowdfunding campaign so that I could hire somebody to help, you know, gather news content and gather audio so that we can actually put the show together consistently on a weekly basis. That's sort of my goal. So I don't know. And when I started thinking about, you know, pay the writer, I just thought I would just give a little bit of background about my journalism career and just where I'm coming from with this. You know, when I started out in journalism back in 1987, there were only a handful of Mi'kmaq reporters in Nova Scotia, and they all worked for the Mi'kmaq News. I was actually working there for the summer as a summer student in 87 and 88. When I was hired as a news intern with CBC Radio here in Halifax back in 1990, I was the first Mi'kmaq person to work in mainstream media in Nova Scotia at that time. And when I was hired to work at the Chronicle Herald during the summer of 1993, while I was getting my journalism degree, I became the first Indigenous reporter to ever work there in its entire publishing history. And for a time throughout the 90s, I was the only Mi'kmaq reporter working in mainstream media. And at that time, it was a real challenge being the only Mi'kmaq reporter in a newsroom where the majority of reporters were white. That's because I wanted to cover Indigenous issues. And even though I had a journalism degree, like most of my colleagues, I was always questioned about my objectivity when it came to covering Indigenous issues. I was always told by white editors that I couldn't cover such news stories because I would always be biased in favor of Indigenous people, that I would always be their cheerleader and I could never ask the tough questions for hard-hitting news stories. I was also told that Indigenous stories were too internal for a broader audience, and they wouldn't find it interesting. One editor actually told me that if I kept on with this native kick, I would never be considered for promotion to more prestigious beats like Province House or City Hall. And I kind of found that rather presumptuous because nobody asked me what I wanted to do with my career at that point. They had ideas what they wanted me to be as a reporter, but for me, what I wanted to do is I wanted to cover the Indigenous beat. I didn't want City Hall. I didn't want Province House. I wanted the Indigenous beat. And I actually got that beat when I was hired as the Halifax correspondent for the Aboriginal People's Television Network in 2000. And I opened the Halifax News Bureau here in Halifax and ran it for 6 years. And now, you know, given back to when I started my career in journalism, and now I run my own news website where I get to cover Indigenous news from this region all the time. I've been working in journalism long enough to witness the challenges firsthand when it comes to covering Indigenous issues. You know, I'm happy to say it's getting better. There's more awareness of Indigenous issues in newsrooms. The coverage is becoming more in-depth. However, I would like to see more Indigenous reporters in this region. And there aren't many here. I mean, to the best of my knowledge, it's just under 10 who are working as reporters who are Indigenous. And we need to do more to encourage Indigenous people to be writers because writers create content. Writers share their stories. Writers share their perspective, whether it's on the radio, on television, or in a blog post. And we need to reach out to Indigenous youth in junior high and encourage them to think about writing as a career choice. You know, I see a lot of universities going into Indigenous communities and encouraging them to come to university, but they're always promoting, you know, the health sciences or law. I don't really see anybody specifically targeting junior high students in Indigenous communities and telling them that they could have a career as a writer. We need our First Nation communities to encourage our youth to become writers. And we need to help our Indigenous writers get paid for their work so they can make a decent living. It really bothers me that as Indigenous writers, our own communities expect us to contribute our stories for free. A local Indigenous publication has asked me on several occasions if they could reprint my news stories in their publication. When I gave them my rate, they balked and said they couldn't pay me because they don't pay their other writers, and that just wouldn't be fair to them. My response was writers need to eat and have a roof over their heads too. What their response told me is that they don't value Indigenous writers enough to pay them. And you can see why Indigenous youth may not want to pursue writing as a career. Getting more Indigenous voices in community radio is challenging. We need to recruit more Indigenous youth to think about writing as a career. We need journalism schools to do a better job recruiting more Indigenous students. And we need our First Nation communities to value writers and pay them for their contributions. We need First Nation communities to pay staff who run the community radio stations. And we need to financially support those Indigenous reporters who create their own online platform and share content like mine. So, like I said, the ongoing theme through this is, you know, we need to find ways to attract people to share their stories, but also encourage them and tell them that they can make a living from this. Because right now, it feels like people are asking us to contribute our writings, our perspectives, our voices for free. You know, and that's devaluing our voice. And that's what I like I said, I feel that that's the theme that we need to do in order to take, you know, sharing stories over the airways to the next level. You know, we can't just keep contributing our content for free. Okay, thank you.
Willie Zip. Boogunamagi, it's a beautiful morning here in Cape Breton. Welcome to the east coast of Turtle Island. Member 2 welcomes the world. Hey, Aggie Baby's keeping you company on this gorgeous day. And I was just thinking of Natural Tan. Of course, the CD put out by Shin Goose. That's right. Loved him when he was on stage and he was performing this song. It's truly a classic with Indian Time. Back in the day, just to let you know, I was a social worker. Now, don't criticize me. I worked with child protection, domestic violence. I was a frontline worker. And I got burnt out from doing this kind of work. Because you're literally taking people out of situations that are not very, and I had nightmares for years. I still have nightmares about some of the children I have rescued. And I say rescued. I have to say that. So my hat's off to any social worker that's out there. And then I was told, go home. So I came home to Unamagi, which is Cape Breton, but to us it's Unamagi. So, and while I was healing, I was meeting with a group of people, and we were playing What You Got, right? It's a card game, right? This is what you call. And a voice came across the airways. Does anybody have any CDs out there? I have CDs, right? So take me down to this radio station. I got CDs, man. I really got some CDs that really rock. So I went down, and he says, oh, this is the slide, this is the microphone, this is the tape player, this is CD, and I'm queuing up, and I'm looking at him, oh, yeah, right, and I'm queuing it up, right, and he goes, what do they call you? I said, they call me Aggie Baby, which is a name I was given in the drug and alcohol field, by the way, I did that too, and he says, we have a new DJ, Aggie Baby, and I went, what? And he says, yeah, she's going to introduce the next song. What's the next song? I said, Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You. And he was like, whoa. And he ditched me. He ditched me, right? And that's how I started in radio. Just to let you know, it was almost like a Walter Cronkite story, if you want to know. And from that point on, that was my first radio station, right? And what I started doing is introducing songs. And then I started introducing community. And at that time, the community was broken up into little cliques or whatever, or this person was angry because you kicked somebody's dog, or, you know, your cat had a relationship with that cat over there, or whatever, right? So with my social work background, I started doing simple things. I started acknowledging the emergency front lines, right? The first response people. Oh, I hate those Unamagi cops. So I started talking about, hey, man, you know what? Unamagi has a spot check going on. Better put your seatbelt on, put your kids on. So little things like that. I didn't tell them where the spot check was or when the spot check was, but it started to go, oh, wow. So they started doing, people started to listen to what's going on in the community. And then I started talking about healthier lifestyles and started incorporating things from the doctor's office or if you went to the hospital or the medical drivers. So people started getting connected with services that are offered in many different places. And of course, I played a lot of fabulous music, which I had a lot of. And one of the things I noticed is there wasn't any, like, really Native artists. Well, there's Buffy, hey, she's one of the Magnificent Seven, one of the original Sevens, okay. Where's Redbone? There's no Redbone? What, where's Blackfoot, man? You know, we're in all these great rock and roll bands that are Native. And I know some country artists, and I know some of this. And, hey, man, there's an awesome group out of Indian Brook that's called Eastern Eagle. Man, we got to get some of that powwow music in here. So I started to incorporate that kind of stuff into the show, giving exposure, right? And the other thing I started to do is also say, I really appreciate people that work in the environmental services. Man, they clean up after us. So they started doing public works, need some people to work on cleaning up the neighborhood. So people started to go out and get a job. You started giving little things. See, I'm sneaky, huh? And this is what I was doing in my mind. I do oral communication. That's our tradition. I'm a storyteller, right? From a long time ago, when I was growing up, my mother, Suzanne, taught us beadwork. While she was teaching us beadwork, she was sharing stories about the old times and also sharing stories about legends. And there were stories that she told some of my brothers that I can't listen to because they're ghost stories. They're real. I can't listen to that, right? But they know those stories. And also a lot of things like that. So I started to share some of those stories on the air. And I also started going to the ECMAs and started talking about how there isn't a Native category in the ECMAs. Well, Sam the Record Man heard that, and he put together a Native category finally for the ECMAs. And it was the first year that they had it, and they had several people nominated. Lee Cremo took it because he's already gone to Nashville. His fiddle was well known. But I'm going, it still does not cover all the different areas of music. So I bumped into several big names, and they said, well, there isn't that much in the Native content. And I looked directly at him, I said, I have 21 artists from this area alone. And he looked at me, goes, 21 artists? I said, 21 artists? I said, that I could tell you that has Aboriginal content music, does it in the language even, right? And I said, and these are people you may have heard, but you don't know about. So the following year that they had the ECMAs, we put up a radio station for the ECMA radio. I was the first Mi'kmaq woman on ECMAs radio. I'm trying to think of, anyway, they're telling me, no, you have to play this content and that content, right? And I'm looking at them, right? I took out my little stash of Native music. And this group is by the relatives. They're all the way from Eskazoni, right? This song is called Bring Your Little Sister. And it's all done in the language. So, and then all of a sudden, you know, I started putting in more music. This is Sarah Michaels from Indian Book. She has this beautiful song that nobody knows, but the kids know it. So I started incorporating a lot of my entire show for that ECMAs was not from the selections that they gave me to promote East Coast music. I'm sorry, I promoted our music. I didn't do what they told me to do, but I did it anyway. I promoted East Coast music. But I promoted native music. So one of the hardest things I find is wherever I go, and it's just like Maureen said, it's undermined, right? Our artists are not focused. I've got some fabulous music. I could show you a list that's like amazing and all over, right? So the other thing I started to do is when I would go somewheres, I'll give you an example. I went to this area where they have machines, you know? And I went there and a friend of mine was saying, oh, look at this, I'm doing pretty good. And I said, oh, that's really good. I just hit bells and people turned and looked at me and said, you're Aggie Baby. And I said, yeah. You play my song on the radio. And I said, yeah, I do, I guess. Who are you? So it was, people started recognizing me by my voice versus being seen. I kept the mystery alive for a long time of what I looked like by simply saying I have long black hair. I'm a 4x4, I'm 4 foot tall, 4 feet wide, you know. But everybody had this imagination that I was this 6 foot blonde, blue-eyed beauty. Oh, man. You know, I'm at that age where if I wear the capris from the 6 foot blonde, they're long pants for me, you know. But anyway, so I always amazed people. And then we also started doing recordings wherever I went. And I loved it when I could be walking down the sidewalk and people are looking, going, wow, she's on the radio. How'd she do that, right? The thing is, I was reaching all ages. Children would take me at an event such as the RCMPs. I would promote an event that was going on. And the children would come up, come with us, Aggie Baby, and we want to show you this really cool horse. I'm okay, right? But the thing was, children were getting out there. They were going to gatherings. They were going to powwows. I was talking about ceremonies. I was talking about sweat lodges. I was talking about particular dances. The one thing that all people have in common is dance. If you talk to an elder and you say, man, I was just thinking about this dance when Johnny Cash came on, right? Walk the line, and they'll go, man, they've got a nice squint in their eye, right? And then you put on a native song, right? And they'll go, oh, I remember dancing to the relatives too, right? So they remember things. And this creates thought into what you can do. So the seven generations behind you, some of those are those old songs. And those new ones in front of you. I am promoting a song that's done by a young woman for her tribute to Rita Joe. It's called Gentle Warrior. And I've been promoting this song for quite a while. When I was doing it, I used to say this every day was, play it loud, play it proud. And it got to be quite a catchphrase that all the kids started saying it. And they started to say, yes, I can play it loud and I can be proud. So it's little things like that that help by being sneaky. Right? It's just being sneaky and putting it out there. So at one point, I was also on the internet. And I was getting emails from Germany, France, Spain, and all over the world, South America, and everywhere like that. And I also got a call from the Penobscot Nation in Old Town, Maine, and the Passamaquoddies in Maine. And they said they pipe in my song, my show into their health facility. Because in their health facility, I promote healthier lifestyles. You can do it. You can go out. You can do it, right? You hear so much negativity nowadays of being, you're just a drunken Indian, right? You'll never amount to anything. You can't even get your kindergarten degree, you know? So, but when you say that you can, and they start saying you can do it, they start listening. But you gotta have consistency. Now, when you're in radio, is there a piece of chalk here? Oh, yes. Okay. I'm gonna show you something that we do in radio that many of you probably know, right? As you know, we are on what they call the hot clock, right? Everybody knows this, right? A hot clock. So you've got 12 o'clock. So at the top of the hour, your ID comes on, right? You do your introductions. 10 after, you do your whatever, your little introductions, right? 20 after, this is your weather spot. First one, right? This is where you can get your sponsorship, by the way, for some of your ads. It's doing weather spots. That one's for you, George. So, sponsored weather. Hey, just do a quick ad. Well, this is being sponsored by Citywide. You need a ride, call Citywide, 564-5432, right? I can do that so easy, right? And this one over here is called the 40, right? I do my shows a little different at times. This is when I do my culture, my history, my stories, hey, can you still put that up? I can do the projection I've opened. But I do all of that right here. And I have literally kids that have said, I heard you talk about your story this morning about the turtle, right? How the turtle got his shout this morning, right? I've also heard about, thank you for talking about Cornwallis during the history. Today's history, I was trying to think, but I have all this research I do. Right, so also at the 10 is your second weather spot from another company that you can do. People love hearing about the weather. I could tell you about the weather if you want. Today's weather is possibility of showers, and it's going to be a high of 21. If you're along the coast, it might be 16. Whatever, right? Anyway, I can make fun. I'm doing this. But when you have these spots, this is when you start having people listen to what you're doing. Now, if you're in broadcasting, you know about these. If you're in radio and you're in television, even your TV ads run on this hot clock, right? And for those that don't know that, that's how it happens. When you're doing a show like I do, one of my first parts I'll do recordings will be 16 minutes. So you can put your ads and your things all inside, right? And then you do your next little clips and stuff like this. So this is kind of what I've done as far as structure for a community. I put them in each and every hour. I have a daily show Monday to Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., 3 hours. And I do Aboriginal content only, right? And when I'm talking about this, I do not just say, this is the community of Member 2. Today in Member 2, we have bingo. Come to our bingo halls. Doors open at 5 p.m. Game starts at 7 p.m. The jackpot is $10,000, right? So I've had people say, hey man, when you talk about bingo, I even want to play bingo. So it's how do you do it, right? So I'll start with maybe the community, and then I'll go to Unamagi. What's in Unamagi? The 5. Hey, there's a powwow in Burladek going on. Hey, come on over, let's have fun. So how do you start gathering a nation together? And then I start doing what they would say the Atlantic region. And also I include PEI, Newfoundland, all the different districts of of Mi'kmaqwi, right? So every piece that you can have. And just to let you know, I run Maureen's Google Quest each and every day. So to promote it, because I know writers are important, covering indigenous content is important. So I support, if you have that, then I support it. I've talked about Kathy on the air before, right? And the wonderful job she's done with the show about her filmmaking, right? So you incorporate what children and youth were like. You remind elders of what it was like to be there and still be here to continue on with your stuff. I'm doing it, and I'm being sneaky, because I'm a storyteller. I'm also a social worker. So this is kind of what I do. It's a hot club. Lolly. Oh, and by the way, I was taken off the air at one of the radio stations because I said, Willie Sip Boog. And I was taken off the air. They said, you can't speak the language on the air. Within 2 days, I was back on the air. And I was told, yes, you can speak the language. It was the elders of the group that came together and said, we come and we listen to her. She speaks the language, she comes out, and she brings them in. So even though the small group of elders went up against the big ones that had the radio station, they allowed me to be on the air. So, and I've only been to 9, I'm waiting to be at 10 yet. Any questions?
So, I look at all the options, right, with technology nowadays. You've got, like, you know, terrestrial radio, satellite radio, kind of internet radio, podcasting, all of this. And just a couple days ago, I was contacted by a Mi'kmaq man in New Brunswick who said, look, I want to do a show. I want to do something, you know, in my own voice, in my own, you know, with my own, like, goals in mind, and he asked me for advice. I'm like, let me ask the experts. So what would your advice be for him, right? Given all those different platforms, like, what should he do to get started?
What kind of resources you have? When I first started, the radio station was in a basement, and it wasn't even enough room for people to be back to back. It was like, you gotta move out so I can move in to play it in the CD, and then the next person, and then the DJ, and then one beside the door. There was no room for two people, and there was only room for one chair, right? So it started out very small. And I remember going to places, and we literally set up radio stations, towers and everything like that. And also, I taught the DJ some of the ethics of broadcasting. Don't be slanderous. Don't do this. Don't do that, right? And there's important, I always share stories with why you don't do certain things. And I said, keep the lingo in your area, your language in your area, close to home. So that was my biggest thing, right? And I think of George. George has come to the station a few times, and we've talked, and we've sat here, and we've talked. And I loved it when he was doing pirate radio. Yeah, there he is, right? I also did pirate radio. Is anybody here from the... what we did was literally had a transmitter in the trailer, a little tiny pull-along trailer, and I had a CD and mixer box and everything, and we had an antenna that stuck on... It was a TV antenna, by the way, and we stuck it on top, and we broadcast in what area we were in. We broadcast powwows. This is coming from this area, stuff like that. So there's a lot of different avenues you can do. One of the things is today, if you're doing your own show, I did SoundCloud. You know, you can do a recording onto SoundCloud. Somebody says, do YouTube. I said, if you do YouTube, you're running into legalities of songs, copyright songs. So don't take that off the air right away. So don't do that. But with SoundCloud, at least if you're introducing, you're saying what you're playing, where it's from, what purpose, then you've got something you can go with, right? Start checking into your what is available, right? I've been asked to do a podcast, and I don't know enough about it to do one, right? So, but I'm anxious to find out. At this point, member two has, I am community-minded. That's all I think about is community. I don't think about the big commercial radio station. I know how to make just enough money to keep something going, right? And that's enough for us. I'm not trying to make thousands and thousands of dollars. I'm willing to train DJs how to do the simplest things, and you can go on with your own stuff. It's things like that. So Maureen, in her capacity as far as being a journalist, might know more people who to contact.
I was actually going to ask you some follow-up questions. What kind of a show is he looking at? Is he looking at being a DJ, or is he looking at doing like a half hour or an hour long show?
It sounds like it's a mix.
It's a mix?
Yeah, like a mix, but flexibility kind of to do.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Like for me, like I said, I'm more, you know, I produce a half hour show, and it's based on content that I collect for my website. So I do news and current affairs. I guess my advice would be to, you know, reach out to people who do radio programming and help them carve out the type of show he wants to do. I would also look for, listen to other Indigenous shows that are out there. Like for me, one of the inspirations I get for my show is actually a show that's run out of New York City with WBAI. His name is Teokas and Ghost Horse. And he runs his own hour-long show, First Voices Radio is what he calls it. I actually brought it up on the website here. I actually interviewed him when I was living in New York City. But, you know, you can listen to him and see how he puts the show together. He does an hour-long show and does call-ins and plays some music and such. For me, because I also repurpose my show for podcasting to put it up on my website in a digital format, you know, my theme is, you know, the license to run the theme is free. I actually went and bought the license for that. And a couple of stings, which I don't really like. I used them for a while, but I don't like them.
I like them.
she likes them. I don't. So I make it a point when I go out and collect, do interviews, that I actually find some sound ups or somebody doing something or music that they're, you know, if they're singing and drumming, and I feel like I tend to capture that to use, you know, it kind of comes back to my own radio background working with CBC Radio, you know, putting together news items or putting together current affairs segments. But I would, my advice to him would be to, you know, to seek somebody else and to help them come up with a show, but also start listening to other Indigenous shows to see what he wants to put in there.
The fact that this person has started is incredible. Like, that's always the hardest part. Often I find that there are people who come through CKDU and they think they want to have a podcast, but the idea is very nebulous and they don't know how to get started, and sometimes I don't hear from them ever again. But the fact that he has something going is great. I would say try to find a campus or community radio station is another important step. Just because there are people there who would help someone carve out the show. The fee to use the equipment and to use those services is very small. It's included in tuition if this person was a student. And from there, you pretty much are like in a laboratory to experiment with your show. Campus radio
obviously we want to have professional and great sounding shows, but we're also okay with some mistakes that happen every now and then. Mm-hmm. If it's part of experimentation, and if it's a part of someone finding their voice. So because of that, this person would have a lot of liberty to try things, to make mistakes, learn from them, and to really hone it so that it can find a voice somewhere else. Also, getting in touch with other organizations like Transom, like the Association of Independence in Radio, the CBC, the Doc Project especially, those are obvious places where you can go to just have, you know, online resources and guides about what kind of microphones to get or how to conduct an interview and how to learn more about sound design and incorporating music in a show if that's something that he wanted to do. But yeah, the fact that this person has already started, half the battle is won as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, if this person was serious, I'm happy to discuss like what he wants to do, what they want to do, and I'm sure CKDU will happily give him a slot if that's what he wanted.
Yeah. Other questions, comments?
So how would you've talked about youth, you've talked about the importance of youth. What are your suggestions to get them involved? Now this is, you know, we've been through several cities and we've noticed obviously sometimes it's downtime, exam time, and so we've come at this point, school's out technically, there's still grad students, that kind of thing, but it's been more difficult to engage young people to have policy discussions, let alone radio, but to have policy discussions. What would you suggest would be ways of engaging young people into these kinds of more drier conversations, but that need to happen in order to, you know, move forward with native broadcasting policy?
I can see them like totally tuning out right now. What I would suggest is, I mean, it comes back to my remarks, is that we need to reach out to youth and encourage them and show them that they can pursue writing as a career and different forms of writing and how you can do that writing. For me, I mean, I just from Dalhousie, you know, like with they had the Aboriginal Health Science Initiative where they actually had junior university where they brought in Indigenous youth from across the Maritimes just to experience university life and what it would be like to take sciences programs, courses in health sciences. Well, why can't we do that for Indigenous youth on writing, like doing a radio workshop with them, to show, give them the skills on how to record and collect audio and how to put together their own little mini show. It's not that difficult. A lot of the youth are really, you know, tuned into technology. I mean, it just comes second nature to them these days. And, you know, putting together radio isn't that difficult if you have a laptop and, a recorder, or not even a recorder, just an iPhone. You know, it's very simple. For me, that's where I think we should start if we want to get more Indigenous voices out there, Indigenous people creating content. I mean, I think there should be an effort with universities and any other post-secondary institution that offers a journalism or radio and television program that they should consider, getting the idea in youth's heads, like, in junior high, that this is something they could do, if this is something that they want to do. So that would be my suggestion.
It's tricky because there are other venues to express yourself. I mean, Indigenous Twitter is a very good example of that. So when there's something like that that's available to youth, which is very easy and just one click away, and they can network and talk to so many different peoples, and that can be under an umbrella of certain topics that matter to them, like, where does radio fit into that, and how do we remain relevant? So I guess trying to show youth that it still matters and that they would get so much more out of this than they would give to us, too, that would be really important. I know I'm trying at CKDU to come to youth instead of waiting for them to come to us or expecting them to come to us. So that's something that I would work on more so.
Just to add that onto that, when you were talking in regards to attracting youth, because at Wawa Tape, a lot of our broadcasts is
is earmarked for the elders. And without youth, you know, we don't have a future. So we were thinking about creating like a web app or like a phone app that our radio would just play in behind while they're playing the game. And it would just be a continuous feed of broadcast, just like our radio app, like we have it on our website. But they're actually playing the game or whatever it is. And then you could try playing, creating the game to be culturally relevant so that, you know, you're getting points for learning protocol or, you know, the feather in the cap learning stuff and these kind of things. But we need to, it's quite evident that we need to engage youth. So at UBC, I ran into some students there. And we want to syndicate some of their stuff from the university onto our site, onto our transmission. And it was luckily enough, we found somebody that was originally from the coast who was going to university there. And we thought that a great webcast television show would be literally to go down to Maine and Hastings. So a lot of our families could be looking to see if you could see some of our siblings who are maybe down and out kind of thing, right? But it would be something that's like that attraction, that car wreck attraction where everybody rubbernecks. Everybody wants to watch a program to that nature so that, you know, like it's so huge. A lot of our families are just, you know, lost in that capacity. And that could be in any city across Canada, right? So these shows can be syndicated right across Canada, but that's, you know, we're looking at creating partnerships with universities throughout the country so that we can, you know, have the students, you know, speak into our radio so their grandparents and their parents back home in the Nan Territory can hear all they're doing. And, you know, it keeps everybody in the loop. And one of the attendees at the last conference had turned me on to the cleanfeed.net, and we've been playing with that from our two studios. Like, we you know, and here I was thinking, telling Mike we're having all these problems with the we could have just clean fed it this morning.
You know, going, so this is an open source platform that's free and available for anyone to use, and you're able to generate an invitation to someone. They click on that invite, and then you have studio-to-studio quality link between their computer and your computer, and you can record it. So it's a fabulous service. People should check it out. It's cleanfeed.com, right?
So, yeah.
.net. .net.
Yeah, so they've been playing with it from studio to studio. So now basically with an Android phone, you can be walking anywhere and doing a live feed right from your phone.
Better quality than cell phones.
Yeah. So, and it's unfortunately it's only on Android because it's a Google-based, a Chrome-based program, so you can't get it on an iPhone. You could use it on an iPad or a MacBook, but not on the iPhone. But the technology is getting so advanced that it's one click step away. Like, I mean, it's so, you know, we'd like to be able to feed in. And, like, you know, I got a text just not too long ago, said, we got to get Aggie Baby on our Friday afternoon shows. So, and I think that's something that we need to be looking at, especially across the country. Like, we could be syndicating each other's shows and sharing in that content and that nature, and I think that's something that is gonna it'll be a mark above the rest of mainstream broadcasting, and it also brings our taste and our cult values and principles to the broadcasting world, because you know, it's not the same from between mainstream and us. So
I also agree with you as far as linking up together. I've always thought repeaters going across the country and everything like that. And I do remember it was a dream of Greg Johnson, who was one of the ones that taught me about radio waves, literally, and taught me about putting up towers and, like George, taking down equipment, putting it back up, taking it down. And so you do all of this online. And one of the wonderful things I found when I went to an on location, we'll call it long on location, is there's always kids that are looking. They're always. So I would end up literally saying, hey, would you take this here? What is this? This is this wire and this is this end. Would you take it over there to there? Because this is what. So for me, I was planting a seed, right? And that's what you do when you're on location, you're planting a seed. and you have them run, because for them, they love the idea. Oh, I can help. I helped with that, right? So it's being sneaky again, right? Sneaky again. But the other thing we did in our school in Member 2, we brought in somebody that broadcast from the gym. And they went in and they were, what are you doing? What's up? Hey, what's going on? You can hear that on, hey, just a minute, man. Hey, I can hear it on your phone, right? So that's literally what you're saying is, we say Member 2 welcome in the world. It's in your hand now. So how do you do that for youth? The youth today is involved in what's in your hand. I can see my granddaughter having one of those good old-fashioned dial phones with no touch, no, what's wrong with it? There's no apps on this, man. What's wrong with this, right? I can see my granddaughter having a fit. You know, why can't I do, who are you anyway? What do you mean you're the operator, you know? I can see that, right? On the old landlines. Today, we are so used to having the world in our hands. So, promoted as the world is in your hand, and you'll get a lot more youth coming to you.
You can sing. Got the whole world.
What a role.
That could be the opening of your talk. Oh, who's having
it? Just to further to the question there, I had the privilege to go to a youth conference up at University of Guelph last week. My granddaughter's working there, so that's how I got there. But the idea was to make a forum for youth, and the same thing happened, that we got more adults than youth there. And, you know, then there's kind of like all these old people there, and are they going to talk or say anything? And so the difficulty of getting the youth involved is still there. But one of the things that came up in there was exactly what you're saying about, you know, they said, talk to us the way that we talk, was the feedback. And it was the technology. It was the cell phone type thing, or in the computer, and how they interact and do things. And it was funny that they didn't talk about media per se. This is kind of like all they talked about this is the way we talk. So the other point that came up, and I got a maybe better understanding of what safe space means, and that's what they asked for in that session. We want to be able to say something that's not going to be detrimental to us or to me. And so, yeah, how do you create that safe space for them? And that in this group, as they said, they're finding that they're now, because they've had to go out and do these sessions, they're figuring out what, that they say, this is a safe space to talk. Safe place, safe space. And to me, I think of it differently. You know, I'm old, so, you know. But it's more about the way that they are able to talk and say things that are useful to them and their story that they want to tell. And about why, they talked about why they don't participate, because they said that there's an agenda set already, and that they want you to come in. You want me to come in and tell you how to do this when you already know what you want to do. And so they said they want to be able to come into this place and say this is the way that we want to do it. And who's going to take that and run with it? And then the other one, you already mentioned it, is about experiential learning, like doing it. You know, they got to be doing something to connect to it and fit in. So it was, you know, some things, the takeaways that I got from that was, we probably don't, now speaking for myself, we don't nurture and support it the way they need it today. Because today, what we got as kids is definitely not what's happening today. So that's my comment to that question.
I was just thinking about policy, right? One of the hardest things to tackle is policy, right? I always love sharing a story about my father, who was a hockey player, but he was also a residential school survivor, right? And he was known as a great hockey player. But back in the day, they shared equipment, skates, hockey, you know, whatever it was ever. And they needed a goaltender, and he ended up being in. He says, "Yeah, I'll be goaltender." So he went out, and they were whooping the other team's butt, but whooping it, right? And the coach from the other team says, "He can't be the goaltender. He doesn't have any skates on. He only has sneakers on," right? So my father looked at him and says, "There's nothing in the rule book that says I have to wear skates." So it stopped the whole game. And every referee and coach and everything was looking through the rule book to see if it was required to wear skates. There was no rule at all. And this is a man from the residential school. Right? There's no rule that says I have to wear skates. So my father found a loophole. Right? He didn't say it was a loophole, by the way. It just does not state in there you have to wear skates if you're on the ice. And you're a goaltender. So they won the game, of course, and they won the argument. My father's known for this story, by the way. He's known for several others too, but you know, it's beside the point. So at one point, somebody asked me about personnel policy for an organization. And I read the policy and I said, "No, pretty good policy. You just gotta tell people they do have to work from 9 to 5. Because they didn't have it stated that you had to work. You could get paid if you just put in something that said, hey, here you go. So with policy, with kids, I find they find loopholes really quick. If you give them a challenge, I bet you can't find a loophole in this, they might do it, right? It's like working at a puzzle. What do you see? What don't you see, right? It's putting forth a challenge for the youth. For me, it's always a challenge for the youth. They grab a hold of me and they take me wherever because they know they can grab me by the hand and say, "Come look at this, Aggie," right? Or, "Listen to this. Why can't you play this song on the radio? That's a great song, but it's also promoting suicide. We don't want that. I want to promote this song, which is done by Black and Gray, Misery. It talks about cyberbullying. They understand that. So let's promote that instead." "Oh, okay, that sounds right. How come you can't?" I said, "Well, I gotta do a lot of bleeps and bleeps and bleeps in order to get some of those undesirable words on the radio because of the rules. So for them, it would be a challenge of how you would see policy, right?" That's what I was thinking.
Involve them in policy. Well, you would first have to educate those youth on policy, which would have to become part of the curriculum process in their schools. A lot of First Nation communities now have their own Native high schools in their communities, and they can develop curriculum as they wish. In my community, we have an English teacher who's fantastic and who brings the students over to the radio station and actually does a 20-minute show. Where everybody puts their headphones on, grabs a microphone, and talks about a novel they had just done. They're introducing them into the field of broadcasting, but at the same time, they're planting the idea that they can share ideas and formulate things, you know, collectively using radio. And I think that using that sort of technique of introducing into broadcasting allow them to start looking at stuff like policy in the classroom as well.
No, I just want to add to your comments there, George. And that's something that we discussed at Wawate. For our locations up north, we're remotely located. All the communities are fly-in. So we had this conversation about bringing the radio stations to the schools. having the schools operate and manage the local radio stations. That could be a way of introducing the idea of broadcasting and promoting the language. One of the questions I wanted to ask, though, and it's a conversation that John and I have been having, the intellectual property or knowledge that we impart when we do this openly. How does CRTC, or how can we work with CRTC to ensure that the knowledge, the language that we impart to the world, like, look what's happening in the news this week, the whole idea about appropriation. Like, how do we stick handle that, or how do we protect our languages from having somebody else taking over them, like Google, for instance. That whole world out there. We have Google. Like, we thought about all the language that we've captured on audio and video. We've started doing this back in 1984, when radio came alive. And right up until, just to make a safe bet, it will be to about 2000. From then on, our language kind of came down a bit. So where do we take this language that we captured and but continue to keep it under our, I guess, under our property title, or under our domain, or whatever. I can't find the right word. So that's a question I have out there for CRTC, because considering, in light of what's been happening this week, people seem to be thirsting for First Nations properties.
Oh, that's my fault.
So I guess I throw that out there. It's a conversation we should have, and I'll leave it at that. Share some other thoughts later. You guys.
Yeah, in light of what happened this past week, like, we saw how much there are blind spots and how much people don't know about this, and I think now more than ever, we could try to find these spaces and create these spaces for Indigenous peoples and anyone who is interested in getting their voices heard. And for me, I'm just gonna like raise that campus radio flag, because that's what I do. But I think that's just where you would get your start. And then from there, mainstream media is gonna have to change. But here in campus and community radio, we're open to learning more and being a better and more inclusive space. And yeah, like, I would welcome more voices, I guess, if that makes sense. Thank you.
Any final comment, Aggie? Are you okay?
One of the things I did notice since I've been on radio, and I'm thinking about the language, right, and bridging the gaps and stuff like that, and trying to bring down stereotypical points of view. That's always been my big thing. I really hate stereotypical points of view. I'm not 6 foot blonde with blue eyes, right? I am a 4x4 with white hair now, right? But one of the things that I found is I have a cab driver that'll pick me up and will say, Wulali, thank you. And will say, Numuktis, see you later. Some of the things that I share, they realize is part of our culture. One of the things that they never knew is that there's no goodbyes in our language. It's numultis. We'll see you later. It doesn't matter when or where our paths will cross again, right? And I have non-Mi'kmaq people saying this now, when I just encounter people and thanking me in the language. So I don't know if I'm being rude by saying thank you or willow in my language, right? But they share it. So for me, they're starting to bridge that gate and bring down that stereotypical points of view that they have. Oh, I've never heard any good music. All you guys play is our drums and jams. Hey, man, you got to listen to Forever. Man, that's a good rock band, right? Or you got to listen to George Leach. Man, he can really cut up some good blues tunes, right? Or Murray Porter, oh, man, he can put you in the mood, right? But you got all these fabulous music that they don't know about, right? So I know some of you know these artists. Robbie Robinson, Buffy, Red Bull. I could go on and on and on in whatever genre, right? So when I was hired, just to let you know, one of the five questions that was asked was, name five artists, Native artists. And I looked at it and said, which genre are you talking about? Country, rock, blues, R&B? Dance? Which one? And they looked at me and said, oh my God, right? So, but sharing the language has started bridging that gap. And like you, we have the app, you can learn the language online. And some of those recordings, by the way, came out of Member 2's radio station. So, and in light of what's happened this past week, I forgot all about that until you brought it up. So I appreciate that.
And I guess I just have one last comment. It's just very short, and it's kind of jumping off what Francella was saying, that CKDU is a great resource to start there if you have an idea, and you have an idea for a show, because just speaking from experience, she has helped me a lot in getting my show on the air, because if I actually had to, you know, record it myself and then edit it myself, it would just be too much, and I would just, you know, let it fall by the wayside. But with her help, I'm actually able to concentrate on the writing and the news gathering and the content, you know, collecting the audio and with her help in editing it. Like I said, it's a great resource. You know, use community radio, use campus radio. It's their mandate. Take advantage of the resources that are there.
Yay!
Kim, did you have a final question or comment?
In radio, I worked in employment and training, and there's a set as all across Canada. So if you're dealing with youth that are out of school, that are under, I believe it's 30 years of age, you can develop actual training programs within any kind of industry that you want to be able to pull those youth in, First Nations, Métis, Inuit. So that's one thing that I did before I came to radio, is working as a senior programs and case manager and developing those programs. Service Canada funded, so we were able to play with somebody else's money, bring our kids in, pay them to learn, but also make it an experiential opportunity where they helped guide their own learning, and it was all hands-on. So they had some of that autonomy from being a partner in developing what they were going to learn about, but also letting them walk away with an awareness training that would guide them into the industry that they wanted to do. So we did that with Quantum Murray in Hamilton, who Service Canada picked up the program afterwards and ran with it. We've also done that with TV broadcast, like film. So we've done it with a few different programming industries. So, and it's just finding the partners. And the funding is there. It's just a matter of coupling up with somebody who wants to partner with it and provide the training. That's the big part. And one of our engineers right now that we're working with, when we switched from analog to digital, he said what he's noticing at Humber College right now is that, because he's the maintenance person there that looks after all the technical parts and changing equipment in and out, he's noticing that the kids don't know how to fix their own equipment. They come in, they sit behind the mic, they edit, they record, that's it. They don't know the engineering behind it. So it's a dying position. So that's, you know, we really need to get our kids in, because our kids can think, our kids are smarter than I think what they're letting on most of the time, because they can get in there and they can maneuver all this stuff. This is their age. But yeah, that's just a comment in case you're looking for trying to get access to the students, and then the funding and the other parts of it too. And what we've been doing at the radio station is really pushing co-op and a pushing placements where we can have the funding through employment and training to bring them in on summer positions. So we're grabbing for them and trying to pull them in. So just some options.
Thank you all. Thanks to CKDU for proposing the panel and helping to coordinate that and recording today. It's time for lunch. Thank you again.